welcome to the Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about barbarian characters in comics. Your host, my co-host, Jason from Saskatoon.
By Crom.
Ultimus is Red Ink.
You.
Alright, so let's talk about barbarians in comics. And as hinted by JT, we have to start with the original Conan.
The librarian. Adventurer.
So, everyone knows about Conan the Barbarian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we do, but maybe our listeners don't.
Well, Conan is a very old character made by Robert E. Howard. He is like the OG, barbarian character that has survived, like, what can only be described as a weird culling of characters, because way, way back in the 30s and 20s, there were lots of what you call dime novel characters that were adventurers and barbarians and et cetera. Swords and sorcery types. So you had high concept sci-fi type characters. It ran the gamut, and the only one that really survived and thrived after the 30s was Robert E. Howard's Conan.
Yeah, I remember growing up reading the Marvel Comics Conan series, so that was my pardon me, that was my basis in Conan, was that I thought he was a wholly original Marvel character for the longest time, until, you know, I found the novels and, you know, saw the original, you know, the Arnold movies. Even remember watching that Xena level Conan series with Ralph Moeller in the 90s. And there's something about like this guy, he's the literal incarnation of the phrase "no fucks left to give." And that's one of the things I always loved about Conan, is like, you know, he wants a drink, he wants a lay, he wants, you know, bloody lucre in his purse.
The defining characteristic of Conan is a man who has a lust for life.
That's what I was stumbling for, yes.
Because his whole deal is that since he left Samaria, all he does is wander and adventure and just live the biggest fucking life he can possibly live.
He lives to live.
Like how people say, live your, like how it's popular to say, live your best life these days. Conan is the king of living your best fucking life. Like, he's been a thief. He's been a soldier. He's been a barbarian, a raider. He's been a hero.
He's been a mercenary.
Yeah, he's been a hero. He's been a villain. He's destined to rule a kingdom on a fucking weary crown, shit like that.
And that's one of the things I love about the first movie, is how it ends with Arnold, you know, done up like King Conan. He's sitting there in the, you know, Rodin's.
The women?
No, at the end of the film when he's sitting on his throne, he's got the beard and he's doing the, you know, chin in his hand, and he's contemplating as only a Sumerian can contemplate. And I was like, ooh, I wonder what he has to do to get to that point.
He does everything. He wanders the entire world.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, depending on what continuity you talk about, through time and space itself.
Yes, we're Ben and Red don't like how they brought Marvel Comics has brought Conan into the modern day in the Savage Avengers titles, and I don't disagree with them, because that the story is batshit insane, and I kind of love that, but it's stay in your lane, Marvel. You know, Conan. The most modern Conan story I've ever enjoyed is that What If, where he comes to the modern day and he becomes a pimp. Because there's that classic image of Conan in like the white leisure suit with the hat, and he's got like a leopard on a chain as a pet, and he becomes like this pimp crime lord in NYC. One of my favorite scenes in the Conan movie, and I'd like to know what your guys is as well, is where towards the final battle, where he prays to Crom, and he basically tells God to go fuck himself.
Well,
and
I was like, he says you can help me, but if you're not going to help me, go fuck yourself, or to hell with you.
Well, yeah, and I mean, this is around a time when my parents had first started taking me and my brothers to church, and you know, trying to get us that understanding, you know, that you know, show me this is how life is. You know, there's all this stuff out here. And I just thought it was like, well, he just told God to go F himself. That's not cool, Conan. But I mean, well, it's more than that.
The movie's never really pointed it out, but like, there's a lot to deal with Crom when you read the novels. And like, he's a weird fucking god. To shorten it up as short as possible, Crom makes you, he creates your soul, gives you life, doesn't owe you shit all after that.
So he's basically the personification of the deist belief of the Clockmaker King.
I don't know what the fuck that you mean by that.
Sure.
Okay. Anyways, so we were talking about Conan and Conan's long history being published by
Marvel.
By Marvel. We have to talk about a little bit of weird copyright in the history of another barbarian character that's based off of a Robert E. Howard character that isn't a barbarian but a swashbuckler that later became a barbarian character with a little change of a consonant into a vowel. I'm talking, of course, about Red Sonja becoming Red Sonja. So, to sum this up, Robert E. Howard also was writing these other books about a swashbuckling character in the 1500s that went around like fucking up evil kings and shit in the Arabia, or the Middle East, as we call it now. And she had fiery red hair and a temper, and she was called Red Sonja with a Y. And the character was very popular, and when Marvel was doing like the Conan comics, like, this character's fucking great, but we don't have the rights to her. And it's like, Roy Thomas was like, you know what, give me a day. And Roy Thomas got to work with an artist, and like, okay, here's a character that lives in Conan's world called Red Sonja with a J.
I always thought it was just with a J. I did not know that.
Now, there's lots of interesting and weird things about Red Sonja in the Marvel comics. She first appeared in the Conan books, because obviously.
And wasn't that, was that Romita Sr. or Buscema did some of the original art on that?
I believe it was Buscema. Now, they also wanted, because Red Sonja was hot shit for a while, they wanted to do books about Red Sonja in the modern times. They came up with a really interesting, almost Thor-like solution to this.
And happened to involve our friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Yes. I think that's where you're going.
Yes, go ahead, JT, take it away.
I don't remember the exact title of the story, but essentially Peter and Mary Jane go to this museum, if I'm recalling correctly, and in a very Thor-like manner, Mary Jane Watson is possessed by the spirit of the she-devil with a sword. So she breaks into the case containing these, like, armor and the sword and basically Sonya's gear, and charges out into the night to fight evil.
Yes.
As these... God, I can't believe I remember. I was like, I just love the thought of, you know, Buscema or Romita Sr. drawing, I'm a pig. I like women in chainmail bikinis. I'm sorry.
Stop apologizing, stop apologizing and just get to the fucking story.
That's as much as I remember of the story. I forget who the villain was, but that's basically it. Peter and Mary Jane go to museum. Mary Jane's possessed by Red Sonja, and Peter has to go fight crime with his woman, and then has to tell her, oh yeah, you just fainted. at the end of the story. Because she doesn't remember at all what happened.
Now, Red Sonja after 2005 started going in this really weird area. I don't know how, but Dynamite Comics started publishing Red Sonja comics as well now. And
yeah.
Much like Conan, going through the modern times, there was a book that had Red Sonja in the modern times, just like wearing like jean shorts and a tank top with a sword, doing things, going to coffee shops. That book was lame. I'm sorry, it was.
Yeah.
No, I thought you were going to talk about like all the modern reboot, like from Dynamite onward, and then Gail Simone wrote, and Amy Chu's started writing a title, and all the miniseries where she somehow gets dragged into the modern day, like she's teamed up with Vampirella. There's a time she and Vampirella teamed up with Betty and Veronica. There's even that god-awful, I think it was from Dynamite, where they did the legendary, like, D-E-R-R-Y, where, like, Vampirella, Green Hornet, Sonya, Flash Gordon, all these pulp characters got this, were thrown into this steampunk world, and she wasn't a barbarian, she was, like, a pirate captain on a blimp. There's something about, you know, you can't, everyone prefers to leave Conan in ancient Samaria, but there's something about...
The last one you mentioned, I think, is actually not Sonya with a J, but Sonya with a Y, because that sounds like Sonya with a Y.
I'm not entirely certain, but that was just within the last 10 years those stories came out. The most I knew of Red Sonja growing up was the Brigitte Nielsen movie in the 80s, you know, also co-starring Arnold, but not playing Conan. He wasn't Conan.
He was supposed to be.
That was another case of, was it in Kildor or something like that? And that was another case of the rights being all... the rights being all fucked up. And the little boy King was played by the guy...
Junior.
Yeah, played by the guy from Surf Ninjas.
Yeah.
And
no,
his
I mean,
manservant was named Falcon, and I remember that because when in the movie when he punched someone, I shouted Falcon Punch, and only I laughed.
Yeah.
What?
No, that Falcon Punch.
Yeah.
When was this?
That was about 3 years ago.
Okay.
I mean, I loved these sort of like, you know, Dragon Slayer and Excalibur. And all these sort of, you know, sword and sorcery movies growing up. So, you know, I had a love for this thing. I also credit this movie with my lifelong predilection for redheads. Because I don't care what anyone says. She's scary as shit now, but back in the day, Brigitte Nielsen was just like, yes. But she's going to eat you alive. Yes. Most of the Red Sonja comics I read are from the current crop, and you know, you look at the Conan comics, like the Dark Horse reboot, when I forget if that was Peter David or Busick. I think it was Busick actually that wrote most of the Conan Dark Horse comics.
The Dark Horse comics, I have all of them pretty much, and they're not, nobody wrote them. They're wrote by Robert E. Howard. Those are remakes of the original novels.
Okay, I thought, I mean, I knew there were some of those in there, but I thought there was, you know, some original stuff too.
Maybe later on.
Yeah. I mean, Sonya, you get in, from Sonya, at around this time reading comics, I discovered, you know, skip over to DC Comics. I had a few, like two or three issues of an original character, at least I think it's an original character, Claw the Unconquered, which is this barbarian wanderer who his right hand got lopped off and replaced with like this demonic claw hand that basically turned him into kind of how Blue Devil was a weirdness magnet, or just he's drawn to all these situations of all the monsters and wizards and evil, and he's trying to find a cure for this curse that's on his stump. And from there, I also discovered stuff like Arrak and Beowulf. Like, DC had this whole kind of subline of barbarian and, you know, sword and sorcery type comics. But the one that I glommed onto and I read the most was a sadly little-known character nowadays, Travis Morgan, the Warlord. And have you guys ever read this title?
I have never read Warlord, but the only reason I didn't read it, because I looked at it and I'm like, this is fucking John, what's his face? Fuck, I can't remember. Why the fuck can't I remember his last? No, the guy who goes to Mars.
John Carter.
Oh, John Carter. Carter. It's, I guess, I don't think it's wrong to call it an inversion of that, but I mean, for those that don't know, the origin is Travis Morgan is an aviator in the American Air Force. He's flying what originally was drawn to look like an SR-71 Blackbird over the North Pole, and he is taken in what originally they wrote as being this the world of Skartaris, which is this the world inside the planet Earth. And later, years later, they retcon and say, well, no, he went through a portal. And the whole world of Skartaris, like you, when you see the horizon, it doesn't look like it curves down. It curves up and away because it's still built like it's inside another planet.
Sure, yeah.
And I just love this. Like he goes there. He's a modern man thrust in his sword and sorcery thing. So, yeah, straight up John Carter, except he doesn't go all the way to Mars. And I just love it. He just takes his modern values, marries them with the sword and sorcery, becomes this almost 10-year-long running title. And there's been a few reboots here and there. There was one, when the first reboot that I'm aware of came out in like the early aughts, written by Bruce Jones and Bart Sears. And I would have loved that story, but Bart Sears' art, he's that sort of guy who does like everything, like every part of the human anatomy has smooth rippling muscles. And when someone smiles in his art, it induces nightmares.
Now, you know, to just very, very quickly segue back to Conan, yeah. Marvel Comics, I had to bring up another character that first comic book appearance is in the Marvel Conan comics. Talking about the White Wolf himself, the albino, the man with the magic
sword. General?
No, Elric. General the no, Elric of Melnibor.
You're going to have to...
He's from a novel. He's not from fucking...
No, he was in the comics. He showed up in 1972 in Conan the Barbarian.
But he's not...
There's no dark elves in fucking Conan comics.
I'm telling you, he was in the 1972 issue of Conan the Barbarian.
He might have guest starred in a comic, and you think he premiered there, but he's from a series of fucking novels from a fucking foreign company.
Michael Moorcock's canon. Are you sure it's Elric, or it's just a guy with the name Elric, Ben?
I'm sure it's Elric of Melnibor.
Okay. We'll have to do a news burst in the next episode because you know.
Yeah, that's him. It's a cameo. It's not where he premiered.
Well, premiered in a comic. This is his first comic book appearance. Was in a Conan comic.
Okay,
that's what I said. I know that there were books before.
That's a series I've always wanted to get into. I've just never really found the time. I know it's another, since we're back with Conan here, another barbarian character that I know of exists, but the most experience I've had with him is the Kevin Sorbo movie in 97, is Call of Atlantis. Now, if I remember the story correctly from what friends have told me over the years, Call is, he is like thousands, he existed thousands of years before Conan, timeline-wise, right?
Well, Call of Atlantis is another Robert E. Howard character.
That I know, I did say that, Ben, but in the story, he existed many, many moons before Conan.
Yeah,
correct?
because Conan's storyline is Conan's age is like right after Atlantis sunk.
Okay.
So Cult is like when Atlantis was still like not sunk.
There's still Atlanteans and Conan's wrong.
I know, but Atlantis physically sunk. That is
Thank
the
you.
event in the timeline of Conan.
And would you recommend a fellow like myself trying, like, okay, I mean, I've got a couple of Conan novels. I've never found any of the Cull novels. Would you recommend checking that stuff out?
It's if you like pulp novels, absolutely. You have to like pulp novels. That's all I have to really say. Cole, I think, actually predates Conan, if I remember correctly. So I think Robert E. Howard's writing is a little bit rougher back then. But again, he's still a very good writer, and it's like. Check it out. Yeah, go check it out.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned the movie there. Did you guys enjoy the Call the Conqueror movie at all?
I've never
No.
seen it.
Okay. It's straight up. There's slightly more violence, like actual violence, in the movie than Xena or Hercules, but it is by no means worse. Like, people die and get like swords run through, but it's basically a movie version of Hercules. It's, you get
Well,
Thomas Ian Griff. Sorry?
it's Kevin Sorbo. He can't fucking act.
Yeah. Although he did have, and this is my opinion, in the movie, earlier in the film, Thomas Ian Griffith plays one of the main villains, and him and Tia Carrere just chew every inch of scenery anytime they're on screen. Those are my favorite villains in this sort of thing, because camp is camp is. But he takes in a mock fight, like Cull's trying to join his troop, and he takes his axe from him, and he's like, "This is for chopping wood. This is not how a warrior fights." And then later on in the film, Kevin Sorbo takes the axe and just absolutely buries it in his chest, and you just see him spit out that that's how a barbarian fights. And I was like, okay, you know what? The whole movie was worth it for him for that line reading. Because when you and because we're still kind of adjacent Conan, the current Conan comics Marvel is publishing, I was did a quick little bit of research while you guys were talking there. This is actually the third time Marvel has had the license. They finished the original run of like, King Conan and Conan the Barbarian magazine, the regular comic. They lost it for like 2 years. They brought it back with a couple of short run series. Like, I don't even think they got 12 issues in like the early mid 90s. Lost it again for like the next 20 years. And it's, what is it about Marvel that they keep getting this? Is it because Disney owns them now and they're just trying to absorb everything under their umbrella? Because I just find it odd that one company would have the license 3 times in its lifetime.
Probably has to do who works for Marvel. Like somebody really likes fucking Conan and wants to make comics about
Now, we kind of talked about it off mic last week, but you had the Conan animated series in the 90s. If there was ever a character to get the He-Man treatment, it would have had to have been Conan.
Well, speaking of He-Man, He-Man's actually a rip-off of Conan.
He-Man's a ripoff of like three different things.
Not Conan.
Well, Conan's one of them, but while we're in like this Robert Howard kick, would you consider Solomon Kane a barbarian style character, even though he's like a little bit of a later in the timeline?
That's a stretch. I mean, it's got a lot of the flavor, one man, his own brand of quote unquote justice, because Solomon Kane is a Puritan. But I wouldn't necessarily call it, because when you think barbarian, I'd say Thor's more of a barbarian character than Solomon Kane. Like you think wizards and dragons and demons and castles and evil kings and huge pyres of filthy lucre and a huge goblet of mead or wine in the hero, quote unquote, hand, like that. You know, the requisite, like the original Conan poster, you know, his thrusting the sword into the sky with a woman draped on his leg, like that's a barbarian. Solomon Cade's like this really brooding dude who will kill a fool if he feels it's necessary to protect people.
Ah, that's a very good point. It's just,
I mean, there are tones there, but it's just, it's too far left field. I mean, going back to Warlord for a moment here, there, that's, again, he is a barbarian-esque character. He is not as 100% barbarian the way, you know, Conan or Kull is. But also, I think the reason I love that was, you know, it was a creation by Jim Starlin, or at least one of the men involved in his creation. And there is more of a more of that romantic sword and sorcery barbarianism with that sort of character, which I think is why a lot of people gravitated towards a comic like that. It's not as hardcore as Conan, but you still get the sword and sorcery in there. Even though there were several times in that run where a headband disco Supergirl showed up and teamed up with the Warlord's daughter, it's a whole thing. Of course, that was pre-Crisis. And we don't talk about pre-Crisis that much. I mean, as far as other character, like, I'm trying to think of other barbarian characters, and all I really have is He-Man. I mean, the original He-Man comics, like, some of the original mini-comics that came with the toys and the original Masters of the Universe 3-issue miniseries that DC put out in the very early 80s, he was literally the backstory they later gave to Prince Adam's He-Man. Like, he was this guy who, very Conan-esque, lived out in the hills. You know, he had the furry boots and the furry BVDs who got, sorceress. Sorry?
He literally was Conan. They just recolored his hair and changed anything. The whole thing is they were going to make Conan toys because of, don't quote me on this, I think it had to do with the Arnie movie. And then they found out how fucking violent it is, and it's like, okay, we can't make toys for this. It's fucking canceled. And Filmation's like, we have an entire fucking warehouse full of these fucking toys. What are we supposed to do with them?
I think it was more they were trying to cash into that huge boom of the sword and sorcery genre in the 80s like that. And
no, there's a whole documentary explaining this.
What, the one about toys he played with?
No, The Power of Grayskull, the complete history of the He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. I'm not seeing you wrong. Like, I've read that too, right? But, I mean, the original stories, like I said, it's straight up Conan comes down from the hills. He goes to the Cave of Power and meets the sorceress. And I love the original design of the sorceress was what became the Teela character later with, like, the weird cobra snake headdress thing. And he runs to this cave with his tiger, you know, pre-Cringer, and just slaps on his gear, and that it's like Thor's belt of strength. Like, he's already stronger than 5 guys. Now he's strong as, like, 100 guys because he's the most powerful man in the universe. And around the time that the toy series was taking off and then the cartoon happened, you know, they had to soften it.
Well,
so we got the animated series. And I love the animated series. It's just, what was so wrong with He-Man taking his sword and, you know, skewering the robots that Skeletor would throw at him? No, he bends it and turns it into a goddamn boomerang.
So here's another comic character, barbarian character. Yor. We had to talk about Yor.
He's the man.
You're the Hunter, you know, from the Italian comic books.
Well, that was a comic book?
Yeah. Well, actually, pardon me, I was wrong. Not Italian, Argentinian comic books. The movie was Italian. The comic book was Argentinian.
Okay. That being said, I did not know in any way, shape, or form that your Hunter from the Future was based on a comic book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a comic book from Argentina called Yor the Hunter.
The man so strong he could punch a giant prehistoric pterodactyl bat thing and use it as a hang glider.
He killed the bat thing.
You're the Hunter.
He killed the bat thing with an arrow and it put it into rigor mortis in midair, and then he used it as a glider.
God, I'm going to have to try and track those comics down because I kind of want to see what they're like.
I think you're crazy.
You're crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's never stopped me before, Red.
I've never read your anything. I've never even seen that fucking movie. Like, I'm looking at pictures of the movie, and it reminds me, there's this company in the 80s that was making, like, barbarian movies for super fucking cheap, like, super B-movie barbarian movies. Things like, they're named things like Deathstalker and fucking Sorceresses and, like, really fucking bad movies. And this is, like, I'm looking at this, I'm like, this looks like those guys made this.
Entirely possible. I know there's one other DC, it's more of a sci-fi barbarian epic, was the Baron. I was going to bring up Kamandi, but I was going to mention it's a spinoff of sorts from Warlord called the Barren Earth, which is supposed to take place in its own separate world. It's not canon at all. The DC involved, like, lizard people, and the surface of the world is one giant desert. But yeah, I don't know. Again, Kamandi, it has that, it is much more like a barbarian comic than, say, Solomon Kane. But I think it's more just firmly in that post-apocalyptic genre. I don't know, like, how do you feel about Kamandi being classified as a barbarian comic, Ben?
I mean, in the thinnest definition, it could be considered a barbarian comic, but then you'd have to include what's his name that lives in the... Where do the lines end? Like, it's obviously a post-apocalyptic... You know, everything regressed, it's all back to nature, wasteland comic as well. Like, is Shaun of the She-Devil a barbarian comic, or is that just a Wild Girl comic? And then, is Red Sonja a Wild Girl comic?
Red Sonja is not a Wild Girl comic. Red Sonja is... I don't consider Red Sonja a barbarian. I consider her an adventurer.
Okay.
And Shaun of the She-Devil is her own thing. And it's more like wild people. Like, there's also Kar, the fucking, whatever the fuck his name
Kazar.
Is. Kazar.
With the pet, Sabertooth Tiger.
Tarzan,
yeah. There's other fucking comics in that genre.
Okay.
I mean, there is one barbarian character from DC that I had a very... brief run. He was brought back as a villain when they were rebooting the Justice Society in the late 90s as a Stalker, the man without a soul. And I always love the story that is like in this, you know, not at all Sumerian ancient times, this guy, you know, sells his soul to this demon to defeat his enemies and then realizes, oh shit, I sold my soul, and he wants to get it back, and the demon says, well, you'll never get your soul back until war is removed from the world. So essentially he's immortal and soulless and from here till the end of time. And then when they bring him back, it's the character from the original 70s series, except now he's gone insane. He's just trying to destroy all life everywhere so he can get his soul back and be at rest. It's weird how Marvel, as much as, like, again, because when we talked about in the Halloween episode about, you know, the relaxing of the comics code, and they had that wild rebirth of, like, horror comics and such from Marvel, And they really only ever did, Marvel slash Red Sonja as far as Barbarian things versus DC, who went whole hog and had so many of these Barbarian style comics that lasted for varying lengths of time. I mean, there was a Beowulf title, Arrak, Son of Thunder. There was a very brief post-apocalyptic Barbarian style Hercules comic, Warlord. And actually, kind of an interesting fact, DC put out action figures based on a bunch of these titles in the late 70s to the early 80s. And when they, I don't know, it was just the early 80s, around the time He-Man was coming out, for a few years, they actually used molds that were based on like the base He-Man barrel-chested model. So you could use them, Warlord and Arrak, Son of Thunder, and Hercules could team up with He-Man and the Masters to fight Skeletor,
See,
which I was thought that
Warlord
was kind
fits
of
in
cool.
the
Yeah.
Batmobile.
They even had the Warlord in an episode of Justice League Unlimited where it was Supergirl, Stars and Stripe, and John Stewart get sucked into Scar Terrace, and they meet
Stop talking
Travis
about
Morton.
Warlord.
I kind of hate that episode because they sort of turned Scar Terrace into like DC Savage Land.
Kind of, sort of. Although the guy they got, guy played Detective Brass on CSI Vegas voiced Travis Morgan. I thought that was the best part of the episode. I don't know how many other Barbarian comics they are, unless you guys want to talk about Conan being in the modern day and
Well, there's
crap
Gru the
on that for.
Wanderer.
Okay, Gru the Wanderer. There we go.
Oh, damn, I forgot about Gru.
Like sometimes he'd be in Sunday Comics and stuff like that. I don't know much about him. I just remember him.
I remember, I mean, he's like straight up parody of like mainly Conan, but the sorts Barbarian comics like that. And it's Sergio Argonez, if I think I'm almost saying the name right. And I knew that art from all the little like between the panels or on the spine side of the page in like Mad Magazine. Because he was a
Now,
huge part of Mad from back in the day.
we have to really mention that the person who lettered the original Gru comics was Stan Sakai.
I am saluting right now because that's awesome.
Who's Stan Sakai?
He's
Usagi
Yojimbo.
Yojimbo.
No. Okay.
The creator of the Samurai Rabbit.
Yeah, I'm not into French.
I got a actually a quick aside. A friend of mine has a young niece about 5, 6 years old, but she's also kind of getting into comics because mom and dad are into comics. And she's like, oh, JT, tell her about the Samurai Rabbit. And she just looked at me. There's a rabbit who's uses a sword. And like I'm just like, yeah, but some of those I think those comics are a little advanced for someone your age.
So were the comics where Usagi teams up with the four Kami ninja.
Yeah, I did get around to that, but just like immediately, she wanted to know all about this Samurai Rabbit, and I was like, knowing those comics, and I don't want to be responsible for scarring this young old lady. Although I did fill the dad in later, and the dad's filtering as best he can, although he's looking for most of the Ninja Turtles episodes where from the various series where Usagi shows up. But yeah, Gru. I'm trying to think of other barbarian characters, but
Cerebus.
never read an issue.
Not too many people have.
Who is
It's
Cerebus?
Cerebus the Aardvark is a fucking literally, I don't know if it's still running. Because if it's still running, it would have the title. But two comics have been neck and neck for the longest running independent comic, and that's Cerebus the Aardvark, well, Cerebus. And the other is Gold Digger. And Cerebus has been the number one longest running independent comic for many generations.
And the creator of Cerebus is a Canadian, Dave Sim, apparently.
Mm-hmm. It started out as a parody of, like, fantasy adventure and in Conan comics, and then it got fucking weird after a while. Dave Sim kind of, like, is like, I don't know what to fucking do. I parodied everything. I guess I'm going to make this comic into, like, a study on fucking humanity and life and the meaning of life and my thoughts on religion and all this kind of crazy shit. And it's just,
when did it start? Was that started in the 80s or in the 90s?
I think it started maybe in the 70s.
Okay. Because I remember reading about Cerebrus in the 90s through mainly Wizard magazine. And I remember how a lot of, not the stories, but the covers would usually have some parody gimmick. Like, there's one where Cerebus is shifting from black and white into color, and you see on the side of one cover is like, with that, it's a Spawn is there too for some reason.
And they had a crossover comic, yeah. I remember that issue of Spawn, for fuck's sakes. It's for some reason Spawn was dying, I think. And he started traveling into multiple dimensions and it kind of like examining his own self, where he goes and talks to Superman. And he eventually talks to Spawn or Cerebus and shit like that.
Well, there's also a one shot of sorts from, I believe it's from our boy Liefeld, Santa the Barbarian.
Oh yeah, the Ultimate Warrior comic where he fucks Santa in the ass.
Oh my!
Also God. Drawn by Rob Liefeld, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, there's stuff you want to force into the Barbarian mold, but it just doesn't work. And I mean, there have been Barbarian characters here and again all over the place. I mean, there's even a Barack the Barbarian comic.
Yeah, yeah, we're not going to talk about that.
I wasn't going to go into great detail. I'm just saying it exists.
Yes.
You know, I prefer the comic where Barack kind of sort of teamed up with Spider-Man because the Chameleon was trying to impersonate him.
Yeah. Anyways, not much else we can say right now. You know, we sort of touched all the major points about what makes Barbarian comics and not adventure comics or wild people comics or post-apocalyptic comics. But there's a lot more out there, and pretty much every one of them is somehow tangentially connected to Conan. This is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Red Ink.
Or say goodnight.
So long.
What is best in life?
The Lamentations of the Women.